This place feels a whole lot different now than it normally does. I thought it would be appropriate to record here today because nothing right now is normal. This is one of our family's top spots. This is one of our favorite places to eat, not just as a family, but really for my wife and I. My wife's from Texas, and so she's a big fan of the Tex-Mex. We have celebrated birthdays, anniversaries, the end of school year, the beginning of school year. We've celebrated so many things here. We've had nights where we've sat here late just laughing until it hurts. I remember one particular night we sat in this booth right over here, and we just sat and cried with some friends of ours who had just found out that they had lost their baby. We've had some really, really amazing moments and some really rich moments here. And all of us are just sitting around right now wondering, when is it going to be normal again? Is life ever going to go back to normal? How much of the life that we knew is coming back? What's life gonna be like on the other side? And so we just sit here and we just wait. So what I wanna do over the next couple of weeks is just give, here's a couple of things that I think all of us should be doing while we wait. And I hesitate to even say should, because no one needs more things on their list of what we should be doing. All of us have our own lists. In fact, I've had numerous times where I've thought, well, I guess I can't lie to myself anymore about all the things that I said I would get done if I just had more time. Because we've all had things that we've accomplished and gotten done, but we've all had things that we thought we were going to do that we never really got to. But while we wait, I think there's two things that we really have to do that would be for our good to do, that I think God would really love us to do, not for him, but really just for ourselves and for each other. And so over the next couple of weeks, we're just gonna talk about that. This week, I wanna talk about what do we do with all the stuff we've lost? How do we process that? How do we deal with that? How do we make sure that we have dealt with that so it doesn't deal with us? And then next week, I want to talk about what do we do to hope for the future? There's something so powerful about hope. And so I hope that all of us, whatever it is that we're dealing with, will feel a little bit better about what we do while we wait. It was probably about a week after the whole world changed that I was sitting in one of those video meetings. Have you been in one of these? Or have you been in 728 of them? Honestly, if someone uses the word Zoom after we get out of all this, I feel like it's going to be like you have that friend of yours who you follow on Facebook who's getting married, and she's posting about it incessantly. And part of you does feel happy for her, but then also part of you feels like, I would rather not hear about this for another decade. That's kind of how I feel with the word Zoom right now. But I was sitting in one of those meetings, you know, Brady Bunch style, all the tiles on the screen. And in this particular meeting, the person that was facilitating it did a little check-in just to see how everyone was feeling, which I thought was really nice and appropriate. We had people in this meeting from all of our different churches in Atlanta. And so we had people from Woodstock and people from Cumming and someone from Alpharetta and someone from Gwinnett. And we don't sit in a ton of meetings together, so I thought it was a good idea to just check in and see how everyone was doing. And so the simple question was, what's the biggest thing on your mind right now? And I immediately thought of what was true for me, because the night before I had just helped our six-year-old cry herself to sleep because she wasn't going to get the seventh birthday party like she wanted. I kept trying to tell her, no, your birthday is not canceled. It's just the birthday party that's canceled. The idea of you having the four friends come over and do the all you can play at Chuck E. Cheese, yeah, that's not happening because it's closed, but we're still gonna have your birthday. But that didn't really do it for her in the moment. So the way the meeting started is the first person went and he started talking about his son, who's a senior in high school, who's not going to get the the senior year like he thought. Not going to have the prom, not going to have the graduation, not going to have the graduation parties, not going to have the sports season that he was hoping for. The next person who went talked about how he had spent so much time over the past couple of days consoling his wife and his only daughter because her wedding was getting completely turned upside down. It had already been moved a couple of times. The date had already changed a couple of times, and they were now trying to figure out, how do we do this with as few people as possible? The next person went, they talked about their spouse who had just been furloughed, trying to figure out how they were going to make ends meet, worried about their income. The next person went, she talked about the elective surgery that her mother was supposed to have that was going to relieve a lot of pain that she had been in, but had gotten canceled because the surgery had been deemed elective. So all of a sudden, as I'm sitting there, my little example of a couple of six-year-olds playing enough skee ball to be able to get the 400 tickets they would need to be able to get the slinky, it just didn't seem like as much of a big deal. And that's when it hit me. We have all lost something during this season. Every one of us has our own story of what we were hoping for, what we were hoping would happen that didn't. And that's not always true of waiting. Waiting is not always filled with loss. Waiting is not always that bad. In fact, sometimes waiting is kind of fun. Sometimes waiting is filled with anticipation. I love what Jerry Seinfeld says about going to the movies. He says that the best part of going to the movies is the going to the movies part. It's the anticipation. It's the fun of the waiting for the movie. It's driving to the movie with the friends. It's getting the Coke and the popcorn and the candy. It's finding your seat. It's sitting down and watching the previews. It's getting into the movie. Sometimes waiting's not that bad. But in this case, the waiting feels awful because the waiting is filled with losses. And what's worse is that it's hard to talk about the losses because some people have it way worse. See, at first it was the death by a thousand cuts. It was the sports stuff. It was the school activities. It was the work stuff. It was the social stuff. But now things just feel like they're just getting heavier by the moment. I'm sure you've had experiences like I've had over the last week even, where I've prayed over a video call with a friend of mine who's a small business owner who's trying to figure out what the best way is to lay off half his company. Or the friends of mine who are just begging God to intervene and heal their dad who was 50 years old, is in great shape, but contracted COVID-19. And because of that, there were complications that led to him having a heart attack. And now he's fighting for his life and they're fighting with God, begging him to do something. Or the family that we're so close with, who's been devastated by the suicide that's happened in their family. It just feels like loss after loss after loss. And so it's natural for all of us to wonder, God, how long? How long is this going to go on? And God, where are you in the middle of all this? I know that you're up to something and you've got to have some kind of purpose behind this and some kind of way to make this matter and mean something, but where are you right now? Here's the comforting news for me. We're not the first people to wait. And we're not the first people who've experienced loss. And we're certainly not the first people who have wondered, God, where are you in the middle of the waiting and in the middle of the loss? I think it's why anytime there's loss, and anytime I'm in a season where I'm experiencing it for myself or experiencing it for others, that I'm always drawn back to the poetry of the Old Testament, specifically the writings of David, because he's one of the most free people, one of the most free authors to be able to speak to God like we feel, to be able to speak to God in ways that seem so honest and so real asking God the real questions. And so I want to look for just a minute at Psalm 13. I would love to do this together. I'd love for you to track with this because I just feel like his words are so relevant to what we're dealing with right now. Listen to the way he starts. Verse 1 of Psalm 13 just begins with these three simple words. How long, Lord? How long? Isn't that exactly how you felt from time to time? It certainly is exactly how I felt. God, how long are you going to do this? How long is it going to be like this? It just feels so indefinite. There's no clear end in sight. And it also puts the responsibility on God. God, you could and you aren't. So why not? What are you doing? And how long is this going to last? And then he says, will you forget me forever? It's almost as if he's saying, God, I'm so tired of looking at the back of your head. It feels like I'm talking to you. I'm asking you. I'm begging you. I'm pleading with you. And you're not even answering. It's like you're not even paying attention to me. End of verse 1, he says, how long will you hide your face from me? I've had plenty of moments as a parent. My wife has had plenty of moments. I shouldn't tell on her. This should really just be on me, where I've hidden my face from my kids just because I'm like, I can't do it right now. Like, this is, I mean, just the amount of time, it's wonderful. There's some great things about it, but I've certainly been at the end of my road a few different times where I've had to just go to the bathroom and lock the door, where somebody's banging on the door going, how long, Dad? What's going on in there? And I'm just going, I'm just hiding from you because I can't right now. No, I don't say that to them, but that's what I'm thinking. But I love that David just honestly says that to God. God, how long are you going to hide your face from me? I need an answer from you and you're giving me nothing. Worse than that, verse 2, he says, how long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? It's amazing how much of this crisis is about mental health. It's amazing how much of this crisis is affecting people who are already living on the brink, people that are already wrestling with depression and anxiety and stress and worry and uncertainty and fear. And if you've wrestled at all with any of those, this has just sent you even further into the spiral. How long, God, must I wrestle with these thoughts of mine? I can't get out of my own head. Hey, just words to the wise right now. I know you know this, but one of the best things you can do for yourself right now is to limit how much news you're intaking, to limit how much news you're putting in front of you, because we just can't live with this constant barrage of bad news. And it affects our mental state. It affects our thoughts. It affects our heads. I love that David gives us permission to just tell God that. God, I'm wrestling with my thoughts all day long and all night long. Sometimes that's when it's at its worst. He continues and says, how long will my enemy triumph over me? Our enemy right now really is this invisible virus that we're up against. It's led us to ask these two questions all over and over again. What else should I be afraid of? And who's to blame for all of this? But maybe the invisible enemy that you've been fighting, maybe has been around long before COVID-19. Maybe the invisible enemy you've been fighting is one of those mental enemies like fear, stress, worry, uncertainty, anxiety. And maybe it feels like it's winning right now. In David's case, he can understand. In fact, it's what he told God. God, it feels like the enemy is triumphing over me right now. And so I love what he says in verse 3. He says, so look on me and answer, Lord my God. In Hebrews, the language of Hebrew is very simple in how it's translating this little verse here, but it just basically says, look, God, look, that's it. And I love how pointed and how honest that is. It's as if David is yelling at God. God, do you not see what's happening? Would you please pay attention to this? You know, a lot of us were taught to pray in these kind of formal type prayers, you know? Almighty Father in heaven, I beseech thee, if you get a moment out of your day, which I know you're busy running the planets and the world and the universe and the solar systems, but could you pay attention to this little issue that I have right now? Not David. David's thrown all the formality out the window. And he's just yelling at God, saying, God, look, would you please look at what's happening? He says, look on me and answer, Lord, my God, give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. You know when I need light most? When I'm in the darkness, when I can't see, when the future seems hazy, when it seems blurry and uncertain. And so David asks for that specifically. God, would you please give light to my eyes? Help me to see what you're doing and help me to see that you are doing something in the middle of what I'm going through. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. This is a really brilliant tactic of persuasion on David's part, because he's basically saying, God, my enemy is going to say, oh, now I've overcome him. My foes are going to rejoice when I fall. In other words, he's saying, God, your reputation is at stake here. If you don't come through, it's going to look bad on you. They know who I am. They know that I'm one of yours. They know that I've been claiming you. They know I have a fish on the back of my car. And so, God, if you don't intervene, it's going to make you look bad. My enemies are going to rejoice. They're going to get excited about the fact that I've fallen. But it doesn't have to be like this. So I want to press pause in the middle of this psalm to just talk about what we learn. What do we learn from David about how he dealt with loss? Clearly, something was causing him pain. Something was not happening the way he wanted it to happen. And I think there's something for us to take away here. Maybe, first of all, we can learn a little bit about being honest about what we're feeling. If you are feeling some kind of loss, it's okay to talk about it. In fact, it's so important to identify it and to talk about it. Why? Well, because if you don't deal with it, it will eventually deal with you. If you don't process it, it will go into the recesses of your heart and soul and just grow and just get bigger. In fact, what we don't grieve, we just don't get over. And so would you choose to just be honest about what it is that you're feeling? A great counselor that I've been meeting with over the last season, he's reminded me on numerous occasions, hey, the way you deal with negative emotion is you have to find it and feel it. You have to share it and allow others to care for it. You have to find it, you have to feel it. And then you have to share it and let others help you care for it. So would you choose to be honest about what it is that you're feeling? And if it hurts, if it was hard for you, if it was a loss for you, it's real. Secondly, I would just caution you, don't compare your loss to other people. As I sat in that meeting where everyone was going around talking about the things that they lost, it was so easy for me to go, well, my little 6-year-old's birthday party, that's not that big of a deal. I mean, compared to missing prom, you know, compared to missing graduation, compared to the surgery getting delayed, compared to actually losing someone in your family because of this virus, that's so minor. And yeah, if we were to play the hardship Olympics, I don't think I would medal. I'm actually doing pretty good. And maybe you feel the same way. But for every single one of us, we have lost something. And don't compare your loss with someone else's loss, because the worst loss for you, it is probably the loss you're feeling. And so just resist the urge to compare your loss, to compare your pain to someone else's, because it's just not helpful. And then What we also learn from David's situation is we learn that he invites God into the process of helping him grieve. This is what's so beautiful about God. We've had so many people over the past couple of months, over the past couple of weeks, who have asked the question, God, where are you in this? In fact, just this week, I was on one of our Facebook Live prayer sessions at lunchtime, and someone asked that question, God, where is he? What is he doing? And that's fair. That's a legitimate question, and I don't think God's afraid of that question. He doesn't run from that question. He's great with you to ask him that question. But what we learn from David in this psalm is that David, as frustrated as he is, as much as he's blaming God, he's still inviting God into the process. God, would you help me grieve what I've lost? And here's what I hope you find out about God. This is what I've experienced about him, is that he is a loving father who wants to enter into your pain and your loss. He wants so badly for you to trust him enough to invite him in and say, this hurt. This was hard. Would you help me? Would you help me deal with it? You don't have to lose a person in order to grieve. No, any loss needs grief. Any loss needs the process of dealing with what was lost. So invite him in, because as we're going to see in the rest of this psalm, he wants to help, and he can. There's a lot to love about Psalm 13, but what I love most about Psalm 13 is the way David pivots in the middle of the psalm. Have you heard the word pivot lately? It's all of a sudden become this super hot word. In fact, there's a lot of our vocabulary that has changed. I'm using words that I never thought I would use. Oh, hey, did you hear that the WHO just called this a global pandemic? Yeah, let's rally together and be socially distanced so that we can flatten the curve. Well, what kind of mask is it? Is it an N95? These were all words that I don't even know that I could have defined before this season, but certainly all of us have used the word pivot at one point or another. Hey, how's your family going to pivot during this time? How's your business going to pivot? Is your church going to pivot? There's a lot of pivoting right now, which is why this psalm is so helpful, because David does just that. In the middle of this psalm, he goes from all of this questioning and all of this anger and frustration of placing the blame on God, of accusing God of being inactive. And in the middle of it, he turns somehow and starts to recognize not what God has done lately, but God, what have you ever done? Let me remind myself of all the things that I know to be true of you, even if I don't recognize them, or even if I'm not aware of them lately. Let me read to you the way this psalm ends. In verse 5, he says, but I trust in your unfailing love. God, I know that it seems like you haven't answered. It seems like you're not doing what I think you should be doing. But I just want to remind myself, God doesn't need to be reminded of that. But David's reminding himself, but I'm reminding me that I am going to trust in what? What is he trusting in? This is a huge concept that he's placing his weight, he's placing his belief, he's trusting in something. And this little word that he says he's trusting in, that David says, this is what I am trusting in, is the Hebrew word hesed. And I'm not saying that word correctly, because if I said it, I'd have to spit all over this camera, and that would be just a total mess, especially in the middle of of what's going on right now. That would not be an accepted reality. But the word hesed is used hundreds of times throughout the story of God. It's used hundreds of times in the Old Testament, and it refers to not just this flaky kind of romantic rom-com kind of love. It's way deeper than that. It's this covenantal, relational, I'm telling you, I've got your back no matter what kind of love. And that's the kind of love that David says he's trusting in. And this love that says, hey, I'm never going to let you down. This love that says, I'm never going to leave you by yourself. This love that says, no matter what, I've got you. This love that says, I can ensure you that all my promises are good. That every check I've ever written, you can cash it because it's good. That's the kind of love that David is trusting in. How do we know that love to be true? Well, we know it to be true because of what he talks about next. Jesus is the manifestation of this love. And it's what David says he's trusting in. He says, but I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. My heart, my soul, all the things inside of me that guide my emotion and my life, my heart is rejoicing in your salvation. He hadn't even realized that there was going to be a Messiah that was going to come and was going to be the rescuer, but he was hoping in that one day that was going to happen. The great news for us is that we get to hope in the actuality of it, that it did happen, that God, your salvation has already come. His name is Jesus. Jesus is the image of the invisible God. He's the picture of the love that we can trust in. And anytime you feel like you've lost, Jesus is the reminder of God who says, I know. I know what it's like to lose someone. I know what it's like to lose a life. I get it. I've been there too. Because in the cross, Jesus laid his life down. He lost his own life willingly. God the Father lost his Son. And it builds this beautiful case of the empathy of God that he knows, that he gets it. He can relate. And that's true today. If you've lost something, I hope that you'll choose to pivot like David did. Trust in his unfailing love that's never going to let us down, always going to be there for us, no matter what our circumstances say, and that you would rejoice in the salvation that has come in Jesus. And then he gives us something active to actually do. Verse 6, it ends this way. This is the great news about this psalm. It's only 6 verses. He says, and I will sing the Lord's praise because he has been good to me. Maybe if that's true for you today, if you can relate to that, maybe you would just say, yeah, that's true. Maybe a little digital amen, that he has been good to me. And so I'm going to sing. And I don't know what singing looks like right now in this season for you. I got to be honest with you. I'm not doing a whole lot of singing. It feels a little odd to be singing to a computer screen or to be singing to my little device. But in the mornings, maybe in the evenings, maybe at night, I would just encourage you to carve out some kind of time to allow yourself to sing the praises of God to God. Because it's one of the gifts he's given us, even in the middle of this time, to be able to remind ourselves that he is still good. When we can't see it, and when we can, he's still good. So I hope you'll come back to Psalm 13. This shouldn't be the last time we read this psalm, and it's certainly, I know for many of you, not the first time. But I think it's what we need right now. It's what we need to remind ourselves that it's okay to yell at God. It's okay to tell him about what you've lost. But it's also really good to remind yourself of who he is. He's a perfect father. This is the image that he tells us to think of him as. Think of him as a father. And as a father, wouldn't you want to know? Wouldn't you want to know if your son or if your daughter was hurting because of a loss? Just last week, I was telling our 9-year-old son that, hey, just want to give you a heads up. I know you were really bummed about soccer being canceled, but they're already having conversations about the football season, and we might not have football this year. And he goes, you talking about college football? And I was like, well, yeah, that's that's what I was talking about, yes. And he said, well, what does that mean for my season? And I said, I don't know, but it would probably mean that you might not have your season either. And I know 9-year-old football is not college football, but in his little mind, it feels even worse. And so he looks back at me, and I'm not trying to be overly dramatic, but this is the way it happened. He said, I want to tell you how that feels, but I'm not sure that I can use this word. And he goes to public school, so I didn't know what word was about to come next. But I said, no, you can tell me. I want to know. And he just looks up at me and he said, Dad, that sucks. And I wanted to cry right there in that spot because I thought, I hope that word is not offensive to you. And if it is, I'm really sorry, but it does suck. And so much of this season just feels like a loss. But I'm just telling you, as a broken, imperfect father, you know what I wanted to do in that moment? I certainly did not want to scold him for using the word suck. No, what I wanted to do is just go and give him a huge hug and say, I am so sorry. And it is hard. But the great news is that I'm going to be here with you through it all. And we're going to make it. And it's going to be okay. Even though there is loss. And so I just want to invite you, wherever you are, maybe to just tell God. Tell him how you feel. Tell him what you're dealing with. Tell him what you've lost. Yell at him. Tell him how hard it is. And then would you experience the love of a perfect father who says, hey, even while you wait, I want to be right there with you. And I want to be closer to you, closer than you've ever felt. So maybe today, the simplest, easiest, maybe the hardest thing you could do is just move toward him because he's moved and is moving toward us, even while we wait.